Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Caritas. Today is February 11th, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me. Title of today's podcast is A Letter from My Senator. I had told this audience yesterday that I had received a corresponding email from my senator in regards to an email that I sent to him in his office in regards to the impeachment trial that was taking place in the United States Senate. Now, I did not read the entirety of my letter to you guys that I sent to the senator. It was an email, but I gave you the gist of it. I gave you the rundown. The rundown was we have to move beyond the partisan politics. We have to move beyond the party. You have to take your oath seriously. You have to take our Constitution seriously. This has to be a real trial. I don't care at the end result as long as justice has been served, because the truth has been made known to the American people and to all 100 United States senators. If the information was damning, if the evidence was damning, then you convict and remove. If there was exculpatory evidence and testimony that came forward in a trial, then acquit. Because a lot of politicians wanted to punt. They wanted to kick the can down the road. They want to say, well, this is a big deal. We don't want to have this pressure on us. We're in the midst of an election. Let the American people deal with it. Fine. If you want to make that argument, make it. But you have to allow the American people to have as much evidence as possible. We're going to get to this because I'm going to read it. But if the president wants to assert executive privilege, that's fine. He has the constitutional authority to do so. But he does not have the constitutional authority to do so if it is covering up a crime. We'll get to that. So, some of the stuff that he wrote in the email is well-grounded. Again, it is a well-written email. Whether it was him who put this together or staff, again, I don't know if this is specific to me or if this was just a generic email for people who had written to his office in regards to this. It's probably what it was. But, I'm likely to respond to him, and you're going to find out why once we get to it. But a couple things before we get to that. Obviously, today is Tuesday. It was the New Hampshire primary. At this time of this podcast, it appears that Bernie Sanders is going to be the winner of the New Hampshire primary. This is no surprise. Neighboring state of Vermont, Bernie Sanders did extremely well in 2016 against Hillary Clinton. No surprise. So you got Bernie Sanders in the one position, Mayor Pete Buttigieg in the second, and Amy Klobuchar coming in a strong third. Elizabeth Warren, Joe Biden, they're in a little bit of a mess here. They are in a little bit of a mess. Joe Biden is clinging that he can get together and get things back on track for his campaign down in South Carolina and then on to Nevada. If he can scoop up those two states back to back, then maybe, just maybe, he can hang on a prayer to continue through to Super Tuesday and maybe pick up some bigger delegates. But right now, the momentum is behind Bernie Sanders and Mayor Pete. Dark horse in this might be Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota. You know, she scored some major points on the previous debate that just took place the other day in New Hampshire. People thought she was calm, cool, collected. She is not the wacky socialist lunatic like Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, because that's Bernie's lane, right? Free health care for everybody. We're going to give it here to New Hampshire. Now we're going to take it and give it to South Carolina. Okay? This is crazy Bernie. That's his lane. Elizabeth Warren's not going to be able to go in that lane and take it for herself. There has to be some sort of differentiating factor, all right, that shows a distinction between them. This is Bernie's lane. This is what he's been talking about consistently. You got to give the man credit for being consistent for the past, 50 years, all right? This is what he has been consistently harping on. Now, he's been consistently wrong with his solutions, but I do give him and many people on the left, even the leftos, way out there in the socialist land or the democratic socialist land, whatever they want to call themselves, I do give them credit when it comes to identifying the problem or the problems that exist within this country. They do a very good job at identifying the problem. Their biggest problem, however, or is their solutions. Their solutions make no sense whatsoever. And in fact, their quote-unquote solutions are just going to make things even worse. They somehow think that if government is just, you know, sort of unchecked, if it's just left by its own and it has the right people in it, meaning them, the socialists, basically, that they're just going to be angels and saints. And there's not going to be any fraud, abuse, corruption. No, 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 no. That would never happen in a socialist regime. Are you kidding me? Can you open a book? Can you read history? Can you go to China? Can you go to Russia? Can you go to Venezuela? A handful of South American countries, African nations, Eastern European countries. Pick a country. It's not that difficult. This stuff should never come here. But people are sick and tired of being sick and tired in this country like they are around the rest of the world, which is why people are protesting around the world. And people say, well, you know what? Maybe this isn't working here in the United States. This idea of free market capitalism isn't working. We don't have free market capitalism in this country. If you understand the definitions and how it is supposed to operate. But that's what's plugged away. That's what's plugged away. It's free market capitalism. Let's demonize that system. Let's demonize those people. Somehow, some way, socialists and fascists are going to be the saviors of the country. It's ridiculous. It's absurd. But people are sick and tired of being sick and tired, and they're clinging to hope. They're clinging to something that makes sense because this guy's talking about a lot of problems. You have to understand, Bernie Sanders is just the opposite spectrum at the other end of Donald Trump. They talk about the same stuff. Getting screwed, getting squeezed, trade deals gone awry, government out of control, from different perspectives, obviously. But it's the main core message. It's the core theme. And Bernie Sanders has been talking about it for years. So that gives him, in the minds of voters, presumably, a good deal of credibility. Maybe let's give this guy a chance. Just like the country said, you know what? Let's give Donald Trump a chance. And a lot of people didn't think that Donald Trump could win, but he did. And a lot of people don't think that Bernie Sanders can win, but he can. He can. Because you don't know what's going to take place in an election. You just don't know what people are going to do. They're just going to say, all right, let's give him a shot. That's what we have right now with Donald Trump. Why couldn't it happen with Bernie Sanders? I hope it doesn't. Because this is going to really put us down a very dangerous slope. That this type of action, this type of political philosophy can be tolerated and accepted all the way up to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. It's not good, folks, but it's a possibility. The other question will remain, if Bernie Sanders does not, and of course this is a lot of speculation, we got a long way to go, but if he does not win the nomination outright, will he concede to somebody? Or will he say, oh, hell no, I did this in 2016, I'm not going to do it again? He's not going to get behind the candidate. Because what happens if the candidate is billionaire Mayor Michael Bloomberg in the billionaire class? How can Bernie get behind the billionaire? He couldn't, could he? Wouldn't that be a major sellout? I mean, his followers thought he was selling out to Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton. Bloomberg is a billionaire. He is one of the most wealthiest individuals, not just in the country, but in the world. Can he get behind him? Can he convince his followers to get behind Bloomberg, who would be a sensible middle-of-the-road candidate? Level-headed, steady hand, not chaotic, not tweeting every 2 seconds about something, not throwing hissy fits all the time. Back and forth, back and forth. Leadership, executive, leadership experience, running a major city, running a huge corporation. He checks a lot of boxes. Will Bernie Sanders get behind him? Or will it end up becoming some sort of three-way race? Because could Bloomberg get behind Bernie Sanders? Could he throw his money and support behind that type of philosophy? It's going to get interesting. It's going to get very, very interesting. And nobody likes the chaos more than Donald Trump. Donald Trump loves the chaos. He feeds off of the chaos. That's why he's going and following the Democrats all over the place before their primaries. Of course, he's there too with his primary, but you know what I'm saying. He's basically uncontested, which is the norm for an incumbent president. but he's going up there and he's digging it in. He knows what he's doing. He's very effective at this. He understands that very well. He understands media. He understands the game. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Klobuchar, if she can continue with some of this momentum, can she get some money to continue through to Super Tuesday? She might become a formidable contender when it comes to the vice presidency to put a woman on the ticket with those quote-unquote Midwestern values that people seem to like so far. It's only a couple contests. It is not a very big cross-section of the country, so time will tell. But at least through Iowa and New Hampshire, Klobuchar has some standing and a little bit of momentum behind her. So that's some of the politics. On to South Carolina we go. Jay Powell, chairman of the Federal Reserve, was before Congress today. He will be before Congress tomorrow, the House today, the Senate tomorrow, on his biannual message to Congress, testimony. I didn't watch it. I caught a couple brief articles on some things that he was talking about. The coronavirus came up, you know, all this stuff. You know, ask the man a serious question. The coronavirus and all this other crap. Yeah, you know what? We have the cure. We don't need to wait for GlaxoSmithKline, Johnson & Johnson, Merck, Pfizer, Gilead Sciences. We don't need to wait for these people. They don't even need to work on a vaccine or any type of cure. Don't do it. You know what the cure is? Easy money. Liquidity. That's it. Jay Powell and the idiots at the Federal Reserve, all they got to do, you want to solve the problem of this coronavirus? Just print money. That'll take care of everything. Get that idiot Christine Lagarde and her idiots over at the ECB. They can do the same thing. It'll take care of the coronavirus in Europe. Bank of England, do the same thing. Bank of Japan, get on it. People's Bank of China, get to it. Solves all your problems, folks. Just print more money. That's all you got to do. Opium crisis? Obesity epidemic? Just print more money. Need to buy a house? Hold on a second. Let's print some money. That's all it is. Stock market's completely detached from reality. Here in the United States, despite the fact that the second largest economy in the world has been shut down for a month and a half. Who cares? Just keep going up. Just keep going. I mean, just wait until the headlines start pouring out that this thing has been quote unquote contained or somehow eradicated. Just wait, it's going to be shooting off to the moon again. Apple has shut down their stores in China. Starbucks has shut down. Wendy's, McDonald's, everybody. Everybody is shut down. Supply chains shut down. Stocks keep going up. Why? You know why. Federal Reserve. There are no problems. You just have to print money. It'll take care of everything. If you got a health care bill, don't pay it. Go to Washington, D.C. Go in that big building on Constitution Avenue. It says Federal Reserve on it. Walk in there and ask for some money. That's all you got to do. That's all you have to do. And people say I'm crazy. That's all you got to do. Let me know how that works for you, though. Despite that, you know, you did have it was a flat day on the Dow Jones. Flat. The S&P 500 gained 6 points. The NASDAQ 100 was up 1 point, although they still made all-time record highs for the close. Crude oil, being WTI, has gained because you have the headlines already coming out with the coronavirus. It's starting to slow down, so now oil's catching a little bit of a bid. $50.51 a barrel. Brent is at $54.95 a barrel. Natural gas, a little bit higher than where it was yesterday. Still at multi-year lows. We have gold trading at $1,569 an ounce, and silver is at $17.56 an ounce. We got Uncle Sam's 10-year treasury note yielding 1.62%. So again, yields and prices are inversely related. So there was selling of these bonds, or I'm sorry, these notes, because people think everything's fine. It's fine. Get back into those risky assets with the stocks and all that jazz. Go ahead and do it, because we've been seeing the 10-year yielding about 1.55% over the past couple of weeks. Now it's above 1.6 at 1.62%. We also have the headline of U.S. job openings falling to a two-year low. The number of job openings in the U.S. fell by 364,000 to 6.4 million in December of 2019 from a revised 6.8 million in November, and well below market expectations of 7 million. So we got 6.4. Market expectations were for 7 million. It was the lowest number since December of 2017, as openings slumped by 332,000 in the private sector and by 32,000 in government. Again, this is job openings. Over the year, the job openings were down by 14.9%. And this does not take into consideration, folks, any type of revisions that will be coming out and benchmarked, I believe, next month in March. So be on the lookout for that as well. So that's some of your market news. That's some of the political commentary. You do have some noise being out there, really being pushed by the likes of MSNBC and CNN as a constitutional crisis. Time will tell. But, you know, we predicted this months ago that this was going to happen, because you remember Roger Stone, a personal confidant of President Trump's and candidate Trump, and involved in the campaign to a certain degree. He, of course, was tried and convicted. And now it's at the sentencing phase, and the Department of Justice, the prosecutors on the case, suggested 7 to 9 years in jail, in prison. Well, I guess Donald Trump caught wind of this and didn't like it, and he sends out a tweet that it was unfair, it was a miscarriage of justice, yada, yada, yada. The other side gets away with it, nobody goes to jail on their side, but this guy, my guy's going to jail. Well, lo and behold, you have the higher-ups, maybe all the way up to Attorney General Bill Barr, getting involved in this and saying, oh, no, that was too extensive. That was too abusive. It shouldn't be 7 to 9 years. It should be less than that. Our recommendation shouldn't have been that strict, shouldn't have been that severe. And now you have a handful of those prosecutors on that case getting off of that case. Some of them have resigned outright, who have been with the Department of Justice for a very long time. So now you're going to have, here's more partisanship. You're going to have those on the left wing saying this is a constitutional crisis. This is exactly what we warned you about, that the president thinks that the Justice Department is his own personal group of detectives to go after whoever he wants, to do whatever he wants. He feels vindicated and exonerated. This is exactly what we told you was going to happen. This is a power trip. He is out of control and uncontrollable. Then you have the likes, because I seen it on Twitter, of course, Dan Bongino thing. All right, fantastic. This is great news. This is draining the swamp. That's all this is. Everybody who's in government is just part of the swamp. Evidently, there's no good guys. If you're going after Donald Trump, you're a bad guy. And I'm telling you, and I mean this seriously, this is extremely dangerous language to say. If you don't agree with me, you're part of the deep state. If you don't agree with me, you're my enemy. If you don't agree with me, you are the resistance. Do you understand how dangerous this is? I talked about socialism at the top of it. This is where this comes from. Socialism, fascism, corporatism, communism, it's all the same stuff. It's all the same stuff. It is the opposite of the American ideal. Look it up. This is extremely dangerous language and rhetoric. Because who are we just supposed to believe? Anybody that Donald Trump picks? I mean, I don't care who you are, if it's Donald Trump, Barack Obama, I'm not just going to take these people at their word. I expect the government to lie to me to some degree, and now it's to the nth degree with this administration. So I already have that built into the cake, that I am going to be lied to from my government. But now you're getting very dangerous here, because, oh, well, if Donald Trump says, well, this guy is a good guy and this guy is a bad guy. Really? Why? Why? Just because he says so? Because it's what you want to hear? This is why I'm telling you, folks, you better be extremely careful. Because if something does come out and the information is basically dead to rights against somebody, I don't care if it's a Democrat, Republican, I don't care. You know this. But it comes from Trump. It comes from Bill Barr. Half the country's not going to believe it. And this goes back to my argument a year ago with the credibility and why it's so important that the president remains a credible figure. That's out the window. That's gone. That's gone. It's not coming back. Not with me, anyway. It's not going to happen. And I think most of the country, half of the country, is already against him and has been against him since day one. That's not the case here with me. I just want the truth. But when you lie to me as frequently as he does, I have trust. I have a problem trusting the president and what comes out of his mouth and what he's actually saying and what's actually the truth. It's hard enough as it is. You have so many people who are biased, whether it's MSNBC, CNN, Fox News. Who to believe? Who to trust? We did these podcasts. Those are the titles of various podcasts recently. Who to believe? What to believe? What difference does it make? Truth, lies. What difference does it make? This is very dangerous times. This is Orwellian. This is 1984 stuff. This is doublespeak. It's ridiculous. It is highly concerning. If you're just going to believe what you want to believe, then what difference does it make if it's true or not? Because it's fitting the narrative. It's fitting the narrative. That's extremely dangerous, especially for a country that is supposed to be built off of self-governance. And that's going to be a good segue to the email I received from my senator. So let me take the time to read this to you. We'll see how far this gets us. It is somewhat of a lengthy email. Thank you for contacting me about the impeachment of President Trump. I appreciate hearing from you. In 1999, then-Senator Joe Biden posed the following question when he voted against removing President Bill Clinton from office. Quote, do these actions rise to the level of high crimes and misdemeanors necessary to justify the most obviously anti-democratic act the Senate can engage in overturning an election by convicting the president? End quote. It is this constitutionally grounded framework that guided my review of President Trump's impeachment and ultimately my decision to join a majority of senators in opposing his removal from office. Now, to me, this is ridiculous. We can go back and forth all day long on the hypocrisy of what Joe Biden said then, what Joe Biden says today, what Jerry Nadler said then, what he says today, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Mitch McConnell, Mike Pence, Lindsey Graham. So right off the bat, I don't like how he's starting this because it's hypocrisy. We go back and forth. That is my entire argument. Rise above it. Go for the truth. Stick to the Constitution and let the facts fall where they may. End of story. Should not be difficult. Furthermore, you have to understand, what was the case here with Bill Clinton? What was it? Oh, that's right. Oral sex in the Oval Office. Yeah, real abuse of power there. He lied about it. Of course he did. It's William Jefferson Clinton. What do you think he's going to do? It's just completely apples and oranges. But stick to the Constitution as to what took place. It's all I asked for. It's all I asked for. So that's what we have with that. Now, let's continue. The Constitution gives the Senate, quote, the sole power to try all impeachments, end quote. I took this duty during the three-week trial of President Trump very seriously. Well, I hope you did. I carefully studied the information presented during the trial, which included video testimony from 13 witnesses, over 28,000 pages of documents, including the House testimony of 17 witnesses, and more than 30 hours of presentations from the House managers and President's counsel. The Senate is not required to hear from live witnesses. It did not do so in several prior trials. Nor in this case was it necessary. As Vice President Biden explained during President Clinton's impeachment, the Senate's, quote, constitutional role as a sole trier of impeachment does not require it to take new evidence or hear live witness testimony, end quote. Of course, that is true. That is true. I never made the argument here to this audience that having live witnesses and or additional documentation was required, that it was specifically outlined in the Constitution for live witnesses or for there to be further witnesses as part of an impeachment trial or further documentation above and beyond what was already taken during the House impeachment investigation. I never made that argument because that is not in the Constitution. My argument was, if there is more information out there, and we know perfectly well that there is, that it should be made available to the American people. Because even if you, Senator and Senators, are going to punt and say this does not rise to an impeachable offense, but it wasn't right, it wasn't appropriate, it was not perfect, it was somewhat problematic, But you know what? It's 2020. It's a presidential election year. Let the American people make that decision. Fine. Let us make that decision. But give us the evidence. Give us as much information as possible. That is what is tearing this country apart. Not knowing and having the full set of facts before us. This is why we got people in this country potentially clinging to the idea of socialism. Because people don't have the facts. They don't know what's going on. And this is just a huge cover-up. That's all it is. Because there's no reason why this evidence could not have come to the fore. 28,000 pages, 13 witnesses, 30 hours of presentations from the House managers and the President's Council. You know, I mean, that information that was there was damning enough. But I said, for the sake of argument, let's just get it all out there. Let's just go. Come on. Let's go. Let's make this decision. Let's give the American people the full picture. And let the facts, let the chips fall where they may. That's how it's supposed to work. Continuing, the president's actions were not perfect. Oh, thank you for telling us this. Some were inappropriate, really. But the question for the Senate was not whether his actions were perfect, but if they constituted impeachable offenses that justified removing a president for the first time and forbidding him from ever holding office. That's correct. House Democrats alleged that President Trump briefly paused aid and withheld a White House meeting with Ukraine's president to pressure Ukraine into investigating publicly reported corruption matters. When House Democrats demanded witnesses and documents concerning the president's conduct, he invoked constitutional rights. This resistance to their demands was the basis for the article of obstruction. House Democrats alleged the president lacked, quote, lawful cause or excuse, end quote, to resist their subpoenas. This ignores that his resistance was based on constitutionally grounded legal defenses and immunities that are consistent with longstanding positions taken by administrations of both parties. Instead of negotiating a resolution or litigating in court, House Democrats rushed to impeach. You cannot use executive privilege or any other type of power that is granted to you if it is covering up an abuse of power or if it is covering up a crime, a statutory crime. An abuse of power is a political crime. And we're going to get to that because we're going to make our way through this too, because that's constitutional. And an abuse of power is an impeachable offense. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. You cannot hide behind those types of privileges and powers to cover up a crime or an abuse of power. You cannot do it. If there's legitimate reasons for you to assert executive privilege, I have no problem with that. I have no problem with that whatsoever. That can be done. There can come to some sort of agreement between the House or the House managers and the White House. That could have been done. The House managers made that claim during their presentation. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. It could have been done. Going through the court system, we already know when it's taken place with respect to the impeachment inquiry, that there were things that were taking over several months, almost going on a year, just to make its way through the court system. That, to me, is ridiculous. There has to be some sort of a fast track when it comes to this type of stuff to either, you know, let the people know what's going on, rightly or wrongly. That way this thing could be put to sleep, put to bed, or you continue and you move it to the Senate. Holding this thing up in the courts does not serve anybody any well whatsoever, as far as I'm concerned. Now, if they want to make the argument as he did here, the House Democrats rushed to impeach. Well, guess what, Senator? Guess what you have the ability and the power to do in the Senate? You have the power and the ability to right it. You have the ability to right this ship. If you think that there has been a wrong, you have the ability to right that wrong. You have the ability to slow the thing down, the process down, and you have the right to subpoena. You have the power to subpoena additional witnesses and additional testimony and additional documentation. You could do it. If you want to say that what the Democrats did was wrong, then you have the ability to correct it and make it right by giving the American people as much evidence as possible so that they can make an informed decision in 2020. because clearly we knew that they were going to punt this, that there was no way that the president was going to be acquitted. They had the ability to right the ship, and they didn't. They didn't. But as House Democrats noted during President Clinton's impeachment, a president's defense of his legal and constitutional rights and responsibilities is not an impeachable offense. Yeah, we just went over that. House Democrats separately alleged President Trump abused his power by conditioning a White House meeting and the release of aid on Ukraine agreeing to pursue corruption investigations. Their case rested entirely on the faulty claim that the only possible motive for his actions was his personal political gain. In fact, there are also legitimate national interests for seeking investigations into apparent corruption, especially when taxpayer dollars are involved. Well, wait a minute here, Senator. Wait a minute. Stop the presses. The president didn't give a damn in 2017, nor did he give a damn in 2018. But he most certainly did in 2019 when Joseph Biden entered the fray to run for the 2020 presidential election. Do you not understand this? He's also throwing in here the idea of sort of mixed motives. Well, the president has an obligation to do da 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 da. He didn't do it in 2017, didn't do it in 2018. Why now? What's the concern? It has to have been personal. You have other evidence indicating that it was personal because he used his personal attorney to start this investigation or to go off gallivanting all over the world in Ukraine, trying to get dirt on the Bidens, trying to get some sort of investigation, at least announced, maybe not even a legitimate investigation started, just announce it, which would, if it was just the announcement, then you know 100% that it was about politics and not about the truth and not about corruption of any sort. You want to go after the Bidens? Open up an investigation on the Bidens through the proper channels here in the United States. Don't use Rudolph Giuliani, Lev Parnas, Igor Fruman, both of those guys who have been arrested by the FBI. And Giuliani is under investigation from the Southern District of New York. The evidence is in your face that this was political. He wants to mix motives. Well, yeah, maybe, but there were some legitimate concerns with the corruption with the Bidens or with the corruption just in Ukraine in general and its taxpayer dollars. Yeah, bah, 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 bah. Mixed motives. Oh, so if I rob a bank, get the money, but I give some of it away to charity or somebody who's hungry, I'm okay. It's okay. Nothing you could do to me. Now, you might not like that analogy, but you should understand the point of mixed motives, the principle of mixed motives. If one is good and one is bad, well, the good negates the bad, so nothing to see here. Just, you know, sweep it under the rug. That's not how it works here. That's not how it works in this country. So that's a pathetic argument. Even if House Democrats' presumptions about President Trump's motives are true, additional witnesses in the Senate beyond the 17 who testified in the House were unnecessary because the president's actions did not rise to the level of removing him from office. Nor did they warrant the societal upheaval that would occur with his removal from office in the ballot months before an election. Our country is already far too divided, and this would have only made matters worse. This is a cop-out. Too bad if the country's divided. Too bad. Maybe you're part of the reason, Senator, because you've been in power for too long with all of your buddies on both sides of the aisle. Maybe the country's sick and tired of it, because what are you saying here? If the country's divided, then a president can do whatever he damn well pleases? Because, well, if we go through some sort of impeachment trial, you know, half the country is probably going to at least like the president because he is the president of the United States. We cannot have societal upheaval here. So, he's beyond reproach. You cannot touch him. He cannot be held to account. You can't impeach him. So any president's going to come in and say, well, look here. Senator Pat Toomey from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania said, if a president is removed, it's going to cause societal upheaval. So they're not going to remove me. Can't do that. It's a cop-out. It's your job as senator. As Vice President Biden also stated during President Clinton's impeachment trial, quote, the Constitution sets the bar for impeachment very high, end quote. It most certainly does. A president can only be impeached and removed for, quote, treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors, end quote. While there's debate about the precise meaning of this phrase, it's clear that impeachable conduct must be comparable to the serious offenses of treason and bribery. The understanding of high crimes and misdemeanors is rather simple. It's rather simple if you understand the essence and the spirit of this country, that an abuse of power is what a high crime and misdemeanor represents. That's what this country is built upon, ladies and gentlemen. This is simple stuff. Simple stuff. It is to protect the people from the government and from people in the government from abusing their power and authority. That's why we don't have a king. This is the simplest of things. And this guy who took an oath to uphold the Constitution makes this claim. Well, we don't really know what it means. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Because we know the spirit of this country, of its founding. It's that simple. The Constitution sets the impeachment bar so high for good reasons. Removing a president from office and forbidding him from seeking future office overturns the results of the last election and denies Americans the right to vote for him in the next one. The Senate's impeachment power essentially allows 67 senators to substitute their judgment for that of millions of Americans. This doesn't hold water either. If the founders did not want a solution, a provision, a clause to be put into the Constitution dealing with matters such as this, then they wouldn't have put it in there. The impeachment provision would not exist, but it does exist. And it gives the responsibility to the House and the trial of the impeachment to the Senate. And our framers said, yes, 67 senators will have the power, will have the authority to convict and remove a president. They will also have the power to acquit him once a proper trial has been conducted. This is your job, Senator. You don't get to punt this to the American people. That's not how this works. And this is just a philosophical constitutional argument that I'm making. Put Trump aside. Substitute it with anybody else. It makes no difference. It's the point that I am trying to make here. Get off of your soapbox when it comes to Donald Trump, Barack Obama, or any of the other idiots who've done nothing but screwed you over. Wake up. This is about the Constitution. I'm going to repeat some of this. The Constitution sets the impeachment bar so high for good reasons. That's true. It does. Removing a president from office and forbidding him from seeking future office overturns the election. No, it doesn't overturn the election. It does not overturn the election at all. If you're in that situation, it is the president's conduct and behavior that has put you in that position. Not the American people. Not the House of Representatives. Not the United States Senate. Not the milkman. Not the Easter Bunny. The president put you in that position. It doesn't matter if it's in his first year, second year, third year. It makes no difference. He is to be held to account. He is not above the law. And I'm not just talking about Donald Trump. I am talking about anybody. Understand this. This is what's taking place in this country right now. People don't understand this because they're on Prozac. Drink a beer, watch the football game. Who cares? It's my guy, he can get away with it. All of the things that took place during Donald Trump's tenure, right now, the tax cuts, the trade wars, the regulatory cuts, the anything that's dealing with immigration, the NAFTA 2.0 USMCA, the China Phase 1 trade deal, trade deals with South Korea, with Japan, all of this stuff, the law enforcement on human trafficking and sex trafficking, the laws that have put in place with criminal justice reform, the opioid crisis, all this stuff, it is not negated. It is not negated. It does not rewind itself back to where it was prior to 2017, January of 2017, when Donald J. Trump was sworn in to office as President of the United States. This is not overturning an election. It does not nullify what has been done. It's a ridiculous argument on its face. Americans have the right to vote for him in the next one. It goes to the American people. I mean, you have to understand something too, ladies and gentlemen. There were no term limits on the presidency when the Constitution was drafted and ratified. There were no term limits on the presidency. That didn't take place until after Franklin Delano Roosevelt in the 20th century. Okay? So for this idea that the American people are going to be the final arbiters, judge, jury, executioners, it's ridiculous. It's preposterous. Everybody is to be held to account. Most certainly people in high power, with high power in positions within our government. Again, going to the spirit of the founding of this country. Couldn't be any easier to understand this. These arguments are ridiculous. Lastly, Vice President Biden's framework for judging an impeachment was right then and it is right now. President Trump's conduct did not meet the very high bar required to justify overturning the election, removing him from office, and kicking him off the ballot in an election that has already begun. In November, the American people will decide for themselves whether President Trump should stay in office. In our democratic system, that's the way it should be. It is my hope that Congress can now move past this extremely partisan and divisive episode and get back to working on issues that will strengthen our economy and make our commitments, our communities, safer. Yeah, like trillion-dollar deficits, trade wars, easy money. Yeah, all of those great things that are just taking place. Making our healthcare system a political football. Yes, please, hurry. Rush back to those pressing issues. Thank you again for your correspondence. Do not hesitate to contact me in the future if I can be of assistance. Sincerely, Pat Toomey, U.S. Senator, Pennsylvania. Yeah, you can be of assistance, Senator. You're going to get another response from me. You can bet your rear end on that one. But at least he did get back to me. I give him credit for that. I don't care if it's a generic email or not. I don't think it was. I mean, there was some thought put into it, whether it was for me specifically or for everybody, because I'm sure I'm not the only one that wrote the senator on this issue. And again, folks, it was not me writing the senator saying you got to convict and throw Donald Trump out. It was not. I wanted the whole truth. That's all I was asking for, because in that last paragraph from the senator, he was saying, well, look here, the American people have to make this decision. Well, then we need all of the information. We need as much as possible. More is better than less in this situation. Even Senator Mitt Romney was saying, I was hopeful that further witness testimony, further documentation could lead to exculpatory evidence of the president. Now, of course, Trumpers and all them people, they probably don't think that that's a true statement. Very well could have been a true statement. Why not? Makes a lot of sense. It's rational. It's logical. It's reasonable. Give the American people information to make decisions. That's all I'm asking for. And if it was damning information and it rose to an abuse of power, then convict and remove. If there was exculpatory evidence, then acquit. That's all I ever said. And anybody who thinks differently has not been paying attention. All I am going for and all I am after is the truth. But the main crux of my argument through the entirety of rebutting paragraph after paragraph, line after line of my senator's response to me was not about Donald Trump specifically. It was about the Constitution. And this letter disgusts me because these arguments are not hard to understand. They're not. And all I wanted was the truth. And if that's asking too much, we are in a lot of trouble. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.